I'm pleased to call to order the meeting of the Customer Service Operations and Safety Committee. This is July 10th, 2008. We have the agenda of the committee meeting before us. Is there objection to approving the agenda? Objection, hearing none, the agenda is approved. We have the minutes of June 26, 2008 before us. Is there a motion to approve the minutes as if read? Okay.
Second.
It's been moved. There's a second. Moved by Mr. Zimmerman, seconded by Mr. McKay. Is there a discussion on the minutes? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed, no. The minutes are approved. And we now proceed to Mr. Cato, always, although others may be helping him with this.
Others will be helping me with this, right. Mr. Chair. In fact, Milo Victoria will give the performance indicators for operations.
Hi, good morning again. I'd like to start with the rail on time performance summary. And you can see for the last 3 months, we have held at 94% on time, which is still an improvement from last year at the same time. The next two screens will show the individual lines that are slightly down from the previous month. But again, still above the last year same time period. The next screen that shows the rail car failures by delay time, if you look on the left side, the categories in a 3 to 4 minute columns are actual, an improvement from last month. It doesn't show those figures there, but there was an improvement as an example for doors, down 7%. Air conditioning, there were no air conditioning issues, and so on. So there's still continuous improvement in those areas. The next screen shows the incidents that are affecting that performance. And one of the questions that was asked by the board last time was the average time for passenger incidents, sick passengers, for example, customer related, which is the fourth column to the right. And that is 8 minutes is the average time that has taken us to abate whatever the situation is.
Can we pause there just for
sure?
A second? One thing that does leap out here is the brake malfunctions for May as compared to April.
For May.
Dave Kubicek, Assistant General Manager of the rail. We did have a slight increase in our brake calculations on the way that we're tracking our incidents. There was a generic clause that was utilized previously, and so what we've done is we've started incorporating more detail as it relates to the braking incidents. And the other component of that is May, whenever we were working through this, we had a lot of inclement weather, a lot of lightning strikes, a lot of flooding and everything else. And so this equipment, since it's the fail-safe equipment, whenever it's exposed to those harsh conditions and stuff, it's going to go into a fail-safe manner. And that was a contributor in our increase in our braking as well.
You had. I didn't hear you. I didn't understand your last point. Maybe you could just repeat the last point.
Okay.
About the climate. May. The month of May had a bad climate.
Yes, sir. The month of May, as a region, it was a record for rainfall, and we had a lot of high water, incidents. We had some areas where the right of way was actually flooded. So whenever equipment and stuff was operating in these adverse conditions and stuff, it does have a direct impact on the on the braking systems and components.
So there's no reason for any particular concern associated with this doubling?
Not at this time, because we're trending the information, on a regular basis. And at this point in time, we just viewed it was a spike that was greatly impacted by the amount of water that we were seeing.
Now, the second question I have, and perhaps others have other questions, but is door malfunctions continue to be consistently the highest category of major incidents? They don't show much improvement or much change, really.
Yes, sir. I think that one of our factors is that as we continue continue to get more and more passengers. We start adding more fleet, more rail cars, you know, to the fleet. Proportionally, the door incidents are going to, you know, go up proportionally because it's one of the most heavily used items inside the store. The other component is that, as everybody's aware, there's a 5,000 series rail car that's been plagued by door issues for a long, long time. And right now, we're in the middle of the process of working out on a two-year program, exchanging out all of those door control units and stuff. So we really feel like this will have a good impact to start reducing the number of door incidents that we're having. Because part of the reason why it did drop this month is because we have addressed probably about 5% of the fleet already, which we know is a problem area for us here.
But I think the point is that we're, you know, everyone is interested in this, obviously, but we're interested in seeing a significant improvement, and we're not seeing a significant improvement in this four-month period. We don't have earlier than this four-month period before us, but when do you think we're going to start seeing that significant improvement in this problem? Or is this going to just be with us forever?
We have several million cycles a day, for example, just door. As far as seeing a huge, significant area, I guess I could go back and factor in the percentage of, say, for instance, the number of times the doors actually operate, and then to see the whole, you know, the whole numbers. It's staggering the number of applications that we have. So to see a dramatic decrease of, you know, 10 or 15 or 20% on my part, you know, might be a little bit unrealistic goal at this point in time over time, because there's so many different components that have to be addressed one at a time at a time.
Well, perhaps in the next report, maybe we could have that context provided.
Okay.
Ms. Hutchins, Mr.
Chair, could you provide a report based on the different peak off-peak times as to the door, malfunctioning, because I'm surprised that it's not larger, because in peak, we sit in the station on waiting for the train to move because there's still somebody pulling the door open, and it's really hard to understand how, I'm surprised that we don't have more, but one way we might be able to see what the human factor impact is maybe non-peak time, where we're not having people as readily interfering in the mechanical operation of it, and we can see the mechanical more. That would be...
Yeah, that's a very good analogy. And also, our key stations are interfaces like at the gallery place. You've got lines in LaFont Plaza, you know, Metro Center. A lot of times you're going to see door incidents that would be a little bit more noted because of just the number of people that are transferring through those areas. Plus, there's also, you know, the dwell time is very, very short, and we're actually having to hold doors, you know, open a lot longer than what's really, you know, provided in the schedule.
I just noted a baby carriage being put on the train and the parent on the other side long afterwards, and I thought, what a strange risk.
But we can look at the information in several different ways, because we do track, for example, our on-time performance in a four-quadrant process now. It's in peak day, off-peak day, off-peak, I mean peak day, PM, and off-peak night. Because there are different variables, because the railroad really has different characteristics throughout the daytime. And so that's the way we're adjusting as well, is to say that, you know, leisure ridership at night is increasing, and we see issues in this parameter, peak periods, it's crush loads, again with the additional ridership, also so many new people to the system, they're not familiar with the activities and how people normally conduct their business here.
Mr. Giancola?
Yeah, I would agree with Ms. Hudgens that the numbers look actually low. You know, obviously we need to have some performance criteria about what should we expect. But let me ask a specific question. When we have to shut down a car because there's no air conditioning, and I've been on the Metro and they've done that, does that fall in the other category? In other words, we have to shut down one of the cars in an eight or six-car train.
Not on this particular chart.
Where would that show up?
That would be another parameter. We just listed the ones that were the most frequently.
Okay. I thought other was the other category.
We'll break down information back in the next report.
Because I've actually, in the last week, been in situations where there have been announcements on the red line that, you know, car, the third or fourth or fifth car, or a numbered car is closed because of air conditioning problems.
Yeah, If it's a car, we probably would not put in the number because it's not shutting down the service.
Yeah, I'm just, but it's like a door, you know, if one door doesn't work, it's still showing up here.
It'll shut down the train, though, if one door doesn't.
All right, okay, maybe that's a clarification. If there's a door malfunction, do they just close the whole train down?
It really depends on the time of the day. If it's during the peak period where they have a door issue, it's better for us to get the equipment, close it off, and get it out of the way versus for them trying to troubleshoot it during the peak period.
Okay.
2 minutes is not a long time for us to be able to respond.
So again, just to clarify, the numbers here reflect the fact that if one of those four or five areas occurs, the whole train gets shut down.
Yes, it's impacting where we can
okay.
not continue
that's
to carry customers.
Okay. Please continue.
Thank you. I also agree with Ms. Hutchins regarding the number being low. If you take into consideration the numbers, the times that the doors open and close, this really is minimal. It's really amazing to me.
Well, let's have that next time.
We will.
That'll give us the context.
Correct. We will. On the next screen, you'll see the bus mean distance between failures and Mr. Kubitschek made a good point because bus is also affected by the weather conditions, and you can see that the May numbers is 5774, which is lower than the previous month. And what happens is with the heavy rains, we get potholes on the streets, which affect the suspension, and the rain also affects our electrical systems. So that's what accounted for the decrease in miles between road calls for that month. But I might add that we're still above the goal of 6,300. And an interesting point is that it is also the highest average of miles between road calls in the last 5 years. The next graph shows the new technology, which is still performing extremely well. And the next page shows the bus trips completed. And again, it never ceases to amaze me that in 1 month we go almost 400,000, almost 400,000 trips, and out of those we missed 1,938, which is about 99.58% completed trips.
Now, in terms of the buses,
mm-hmm.
where are we going to see information on the bus bunching issue? Which we're actually having a public meeting on this in Ward 1.
Yes.
On July 15th, I think, you know, on the 16th Street bus routes.
Correct.
When can we get a report on the improvements that we're making in that regard? Can you have something at the next meeting?
We will have that in September. As I mentioned in the last meeting, we have the technology now that's been fully implemented. We had a kind of a rough start to be implemented by the end of June, beginning of July. And as recently as yesterday, we were finally able to get the system to work properly because there was some duplication in there. So by September, we'll have some data as to where we are in regards to on-time performance, bunching, and things of that nature.
Right. That meeting that I referenced is on the 16th Street lines is scheduled for July 15th at 6:30 at St. Stephen and the Incarnation Episcopal Church.
Correct.
16th and noon.
Correct.
So I think you're going to hear from a lot of people there. Okay.
All right, thank you. Escalators and elevator reliability. If you look at the escalator, both actually escalator and elevator screens, both of them for the last 3 months show a slight decrease, very small decrease, but that's because we awarded a new contract in March, which resulted in additional work being done, so additional elevators and escalators being taken out of service for rehabs.
What did you say? You said because we have a new contractor, we're doing more work, which means more elevators and escalators are taken out of service.
Exactly.
Is that what I heard?
Yes. For rehabs.
We have a schedule for the rehabs over a period of time, and this is just a peak in the rehab work being done.
Okay. On the next screen that shows the unscheduled failures,
Have we dropped our dirty dozen, Russ? We're not doing that anymore.
But you mean the ones that are out more than 4 weeks?
Most frequently out. I didn't see that chart. Is that been, that's not, we're not going to get that on a monthly.
I was not, we can bring that back. That was an intentional.
That was a favorite of mine.
Okay. All right.
We can send you.
And maybe others liked it too. I might not just be me.
We have that information.
I think we should have that as a standard report. Do you mind if that can be done?
We will provide whatever the board would like to see.
Okay, good. All right. Okay. Let's bring that back. Okay.
All right. On the escalators analysis, one of the things that you asked for was the average maintenance call, the time for the average maintenance call for reset and adjustments, and that number is 25 minutes.
What page are you on?
I am on page 15.
Okay.
I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but any time that a reset or a safety sensor is triggered, we're required to perform a complete system check before resetting it. And so the time is average about 25 minutes to put it back in service. And the same thing holds true on the next screen for elevators, but the time on that is average 30 minutes.
Beginning to end, from failure to restoration.
From the time that we're notified.
From the time you're notified to restoration.
Yes. And that's average. On the next screen, the escalator is not functioning for more than 4 weeks. A couple of issues on the first one, which is unit 2 at the courthouse. The contractor has experienced some additional problems due to the condition being worse than anticipated. So as you know, it had to be moved back, but the existing projection completion date still stands of 7/14. So by next week, that should be completed.
Question.
Yes. That is the that's the name of that number of that unit that is at the courthouse stations. They're numbered.
Right. So one of them connects the mezzanine to the platform, and one connects the mezzanine to the service. There's two, right?
Yeah. Okay. So it's
So one is number one, and one is number
exactly.
Two.
Well, that's a good question. Let me ask Dave Lacoste here.
I have to answer that yes and no. It depends on how many elevators are in a particular station and how many sides.
If the question is consistent and the answer is yes and no, then the answer is no.
In most cases, unit number one is the street elevator and unit number two is the elevator that goes from the platform down to, from the mezzanine down to the platform. Except when there's more than two elevators. Then it gets, the numbers get a little confused.
So in this case, though?
This case, this is the platform.
Okay, the next one is the escalator unit number 4 at Boston, that the initial completion date was 7/7. It is now moved to 7/18. And the reason for that is because during the inspection by the jurisdiction, it was found that the main disconnect was not up to code. And to bring it up to code, the whole system needs to be powered down, and that is to be scheduled with the power company. So it's on schedule for 7/18. The next screen shows the metro access. On time went up very slightly by 0.1%. From last month. However, the ridership is down by 4.5%. Ridership's down by 4.5%.
Is that the first time that's ever happened?
I can't answer that. I don't have that information with me, but I can get that for you.
I think there's, go ahead.
The question was why?
No.
Is that just the first time that it's ever happened?
No, it's not the first time it happened, but the month of June was one of the hottest months we've ever had. The temperature actually affects our ridership for the metro access. So more data coming, but the preliminary is we know when the temperatures are 95 and above, we get the spread. And it happens in May.
Is this May? We're talking about May?
Yes. May was hot. May, the end of May, ridership, the heat was
I traveled in the queue, and consequently, our ridership was down towards the end of that line.
So this is something we've observed before?
Yes. Our ridership in summer is less, and also vary day by day for the trips.
Okay.
I learned something new myself.
Okay, good. Thank you.
That concludes my report. I'll turn it over to Chief Tate Borden.
Yes, Mr. Bradford.
I was looking very quickly at the same figures in the financials. 5581. I just want to see what happened with Metro Access. And it says we're above last year. So we got two different numbers. This is say Metro Access had ridership above last year. Was that what you just said was below last year in May?
It's below last month's.
The same month last. Oh, the month before or. Oh, you say it went down from April to May, not May to May.
Correct. Yeah, from one month to the next, not from the previous year.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Chief, we're ready for you.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to come and talk about the emergency management program initiative that's ongoing here at WMATA. Also, to provide information to you about jurisdictional cameras for outdoor stations at your request. We provided that information to you. We also provided crime statistics going back to January of this year that relate to metro crime as well as jurisdictional crime statistics, if in fact they were available from your respective jurisdictions. To talk about the emergency management project, this is a project that was funded completely by the Federal Transit Administration. As a matter of fact, this was one of their 08 annual performance plan goals to develop an emergency management program and to have it as a model that could be shared ultimately with other transit agencies across the country. WMATA was chosen as the first pilot for that particular test bed based upon the location that WMATA has, the fact that it may very well be a part of all hazards approach to situations, whether they're accidents, incidents, possibility of terrorist attacks, things of that nature, and the fact that WMATA plays a very critical role in the regions as far as transporting people. Also, what was recognized was that WMATA has the distinct ability to manage emergencies well. Next slide. When you're looking at an emergency management basic, you're talking about a continuous process of preparing, supporting, rebuilding society, again, when there's a natural or man-made disaster that occurs. We're looking at protecting our patrons, ensuring that our infrastructure is available. And the four phases of this action is preparedness, which we are doing a great job, and we are looking to improve and enhance that, responding to an emergency, recovering from an emergency, and providing mitigation. And this is a continuous process that we go through in this effort. Again, using the incident command system that we do, working with the local jurisdictional fire department, this is also in compliance with the national incident management systems that's been adopted by the federal government. The emergency management is the coordination of actions taken place away from the incident scene. So it's more than just what's happening at that particular incident, but it may be the ripple effect that what's happening down the road, down the line, coordination with local jurisdictional agencies, making sure if in fact there's inclement weather that was hot, that we make sure that there's drinking material available to our patrons. And so it's a whole host of things that sort of combine to address emergency management. It's a systematic process that, when instituted, will protect lives, minimize response time and service delays, without doubt, strengthen customer relations, recover costs, and capitalizes on the existing expertise that's right here within the Transit Authority and rests within the jurisdictional agencies that we support. Programs will include communications initiatives based on past board presentations. One of the issues concerning accidents or emergencies was that communication piece, and this emergency management program will definitely include and address that. WMATA Metro already practices and implements many of the key emergency management functions for special events. We've been doing it for 30-plus years, July 4th, the Nationals, Cherry Blossom Parades, the Pope's visit, and this is just some examples of the number of people recently at one of the national games that we sort of manage, recently having successfully completed the 4th of July and managing crowds. I think that all the Metro employees, in addition to the jurisdictional assistants, did a wonderful job in that effort. The expertise exists for handling WMATA incidents. What is happening with this emergency management program is that we're tapping into the resource and expertise of all of the members within WMATA that have operational bus coordinations with local jurisdictional agencies, and we're making sure that this is a comprehensive program. The efforts would improve WMATA coordinations, cooperations, and communications, which will be orchestrated by emergency management program for maximum effectiveness. So it's bringing everybody together. Everybody's identified with their roles and their expertise. It's not free. The federal government is paying for this particular effort. So there's no cost other than the liaisons and identifying different members within the WMATA Metro to work in concert with developing this emergency management plan. It's necessary for many and all upcoming events, potential incidents, and to maximize all federal funds available. We will create an emergency operations plan once this template is developed and presented to us. We will serve as a model for all transit agencies across the United States once this is completed and implemented. What we are doing now is reviewing all existing emergency management practices. We are creating a WMATA emergency management team to advise and represent departmental interests in the program. We're completing the WMATA emergency operations plan, working with jurisdictional law enforcement, the Council of Governments, to make sure that if there are plans out there that need revisions, we are working diligently to do that. We are updating the WMATA executive leadership team on a regular basis, and the FTA looks to have this program completed and checked off as being successfully completed by September 30th of this year. Going back, I might want to add that this effort is being led by Peter LaPorte, who's tasked by the federal government to work. He's known throughout the transit industry for emergencies, having worked with New York Police Department, the D.C. government, and Massachusetts. Now, getting to the top 10 District of Columbia Outdoor Metro Rail camera lists, which have been presented before, we based on these locations based on a report of crime activities there. I can also say, while we're talking about crime, that once the U Street cameras were installed, a year later, we have witnessed 34% reduction in reported crime at that particular station. Next slide. We've also done this for those top 10 Maryland outdoor stations, and you can see, again, based upon crime statistics that have been reported. We have provided this at the request of those respective board members if, in fact, they deem to fund this particular initiative. Again, this is those are those stations in Virginia. And again, you can see that the majority of the crime is being committed in and around those high-volume, end-of-the-line stations.
Thank you, Brian. Are you finished?
I think so.
Okay. Let me just make a quick point here. Because, and I would ask you, Mr. K, to clarify this in some of your communications department's announcements, that the exterior camera program in the District of Columbia is being paid for by D.C. taxpayers. Okay, would you, because some of the media that has gone out is suggesting that this is a federal program, it's a Metro WMATA program. If you could just clarify that we've come up with this money because we thought it was important to enhance this particular type of security at the exterior, on the exterior of these stations. And so if you could do me that service. And we support, these are the recommendations of the Department of Transportation and the Metropolitan Police Department as to the stations that we will select in terms of how we spend the money that we've appropriated for this purpose. And so these are the 10 stations that, and so I assume that these are the 10 stations where cameras are going to be installed in the District of Columbia, and that no action by this board is necessary in order to designate these stations, right? You say stations recommended. I mean, this is the decision that the staff is making on where to place these cameras. Am I right or am I wrong?
Yes, you're right.
Okay, good. And so there's no, this is not an action item. This is fully funded by the District of Columbia. End of story in that regard. Okay, well, I commend you for this list. But now others want to talk, Mr. Solomon, Mr. Giancola. Anyone else want to say something?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. With respect to the District of Columbia cameras that the district has agreed to pay for, if we look at the Rhode Island Avenue station, how many cameras are actually going to be installed at that particular location?
Probably going to be one camera.
And what's the cost, projected cost?
Costs roughly run about $12,000, depending upon how much cable needs to be run. Yeah.
Per camera?
Per camera.
Okay, when you look at the Prince George's list, are you recommending one camera per station, or there are multiple cameras per station?
When we're looking at Prince George's, we're talking about one camera. And these are just locations that, based upon crime, we would recommend. Whether or not the decision is made to, because of the size of the station, place two, that would be clearly up to the respective board members.
And that cost, projected cost, is about $12,000 per camera?
Camera cost itself is roughly about $3,000, but for the installation and the labor and the work and everything.
Mr. Giancola and Ms. Hutchins.
Chief, let me ask you a question. When did this start? What was the cost? And then, of course, you've indicated when it's going to be done as a start. Let me ask those questions first.
The
emergency management program was a program that was implemented by the FTA in October of 2007. Actually, on ground, it was entered into a cooperative agreement with the National Transit Institute. They probably started probably about 4 months ago. It had started here with MARTA probably about 3 months ago.
And it's basically looking at policy and procedures and things
looking
like
at
that.
All aspects, continuity of operations.
What did it cost?
The cost was roughly $556,000 that the federal government paid for this.
Now the question I have is, we already had our existing emergency management plan, I presume. I mean, we had a plan, correct?
Yes.
So it's a matter of looking at this plan and upgrading it and updating it. Now, was our original plan based on NIMS anyways? Because NIMS has been around for many years.
Yes. But this emergency management program is more than just an emergency management plan. It's a comprehensive approach that will make sure that there's communications with the local government, with the bids in the case of the District of Columbia, to make sure that communication is there, that training, that drills, exercises, that a continuity of operation plan is developed not only for this building, but for all WMATA facilities.
Our whole system.
Yeah, to address pandemic flus, floods, anything. So that's just one piece of it. It's getting the experts from bus, rail, operations to contribute their parts. It's what we don't know that we don't know when we work with the jurisdictional agencies to make sure that we are completely on pace with everything that concerns an emergency.
Is the end product also include a list of things like equipment?
Absolutely.
Such we need to have?
Absolutely.
And do they have enough expertise to provide a dollar value in that equipment?
A dollar value, I don't know, but what will be...
Where I'm going with this is that, you know, this would be one of those kind of unfunded kinds of things that we talked about the budget earlier. Those are the kinds of things that we need to be looking at in the future to either expend or delay or put timeframes on for procurement.
Well, in the area of an emergency management, we're working with, again, with the federal government because there's a distinct possibility that funds may be available through those avenues, but it's identifying those things that we do need.
So we're going to see a list, a punch list of things you need to do this, and this is what it may be an estimated cost on.
Absolutely. And
okay.
Then,
the last part of my question relates to Mr. Francis provided a listing of lessons learned from the recent Pepco outage.
Right.
There are about 9 items on there, which some of it is process-oriented, some of it is equipment-oriented. Is this being incorporated in that report?
Absolutely will be, sir.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Hutchins.
Well, let me stay on the emergency questions. How different does this experience have with the overall regional operation? That emergency prepared.
It will connect everything, so that we've recently had meetings with the fire department, and is understanding the particulars of WMATA, the relationship, is understanding from the fire department's perspective what happens when there is a derailment, an emergency, how we go about evacuation. We want to make sure that we are on the same page, that everybody is clear from the standpoint of responding to that emergency, to making sure that safety is foremost, and that we can, once it's safe, we can reopen the system. So it's doing everything in a collaborative fashion as much as possible.
So when WMATA has been at the table on the regional emergency preparedness, what role and what was your analysis and input that you provided in that, and to what extent does this expand that, or?
It expands internally. That's which is the most important.
Okay.
It expands internally, and then it also broadens out and provides understanding to those regional players as to what we're capable of doing, what the expectations from them will be, what the expectations from external sources that, say, the Red Cross, and what roles that they can play, or any other entity that's a part of this comprehensive emergency management and the response to our patrons.
My other question was on the cameras. Monitors the cameras.
The cameras will be monitored by the police department, and as well as jurisdictional, like we have cameras that are currently monitored by the Metropolitan Police Department as well.
Okay, I have to go chair a hearing at the council at 11 o'clock, and so Mr. Lincoln is the vice chair, but let me ask Mr. Monome, would you assume the chairmanship? The only remaining question I have is that the district has appropriated, I think, about $225,000 for these cameras. So I assume that some of these stations, assuming $12,500 per camera total cost, that some of these stations there will be multiple cameras.
Right. That would be...
Because we want to spend all of our money for this purpose. So, and if you could get back to me and the other members from D.C. as to how you see that being distributed.
Okay.
And also with the timeline as to when the cameras will be installed. Okay?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Martin.
Mr. Chairman, since we do have the chairman of the board here,
Not particular. All right.
Delegate.
Responsibility.
It is. So, Mr. General Manager, I believe we have one last presentation, information item.
Yes, the last presentation is my safety department, Ron Kill, who's our Assistant General Manager of Safety. We give that report to the Chief Safety Officer.
Okay. As you can see, for rail safety performance indicators, rail passenger injuries are down by 10%. Sorry about that. As you can see, the rail passenger injuries are down by 10% for the month of May. That's on board injuries. For in stations and parking lots, it's down by 29%. Escalator injuries are down by 59%, and the fire incidents are down by 33%. Smoke incidents are down by 69%, and there's a typo that variance for the month of May should be a reduction of 11 and not 3. Take care of that. I think the difference between 5 and 16 is a negative 11, I believe so. Next slide. For bus passengers' performance here, injury rates are down 15%, and as you can see, the preventable bus collision rates are down, and the non-preventable bus collision rates is slightly down, and the bus passenger injury rate is down slightly. So we've had a reduction all the way across for both bus and rail passenger injuries. Any questions?
Also, if I might include, Mr. Chair, and from the standpoint of goals given to the agency by the board, our workers' compensation claims are down approximately 11%, is that correct?
That's correct, 11%.
And we hope to continue to improve in that area, but the board's goals are 10%. Now, we'll be reporting in September our performance year-to-date against the goals established by the board.
You anticipated my question, is if we could see with every report what the annual goal and how we're tracking it, so whether that'd be helpful to make this report a little more.
Yes, sir.
Any other questions? If not,
that concludes our presentation.
Fantastic. Yeah. I think that concludes the agenda for the Customer Service and Operations Committee. And with that, call this meeting adjourned.
Thank you.
Malcolm.